This episode of Travel Today with Peter Greenberg is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial.
It's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one travel news journalist. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, your travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here, and welcome to the podcast that's done from a different location around the world every single week. One day Canada, the next day Thailand, then New York, London. You just never know. This week, we come to you from United Arab Emirates, and in particular, Ras Al Khaimah. One of the Emirates here that most of you didn't even know existed and fewer of you have even been to. Well, for those of you who think that there's just barren desert here, think again. For those of you who think there's no history here, think again. Wherever you walk, you just look around and you're going to see life and you're going to see history. Earlier today, I climbed all 242 steps up to the Daya Fort. And one of the last remaining, in fact, the only remaining military tower left in the UAE, with a 360-degree view of the mountains and the sea. Let me say that again, 242 steps. And they weren't that easy, but we did it. But there's more than that. And joining me now, the resident archaeologist from the Department of Antiquities and Museums, right here in the RIK, is Ahmad Hillel. How are you, sir?
Fine, thank you.
You heard me talk about the fort. I mean, it's amazing to think the words 16th century.
Yes. I would add something else. It's not
of course
just
you are, because
the
you're the resident archaeologist.
Yes, it's not just the fort. It's 4,000 years of history we are talking about in Daya. On the western side of the fort, we have Bronze Age period, which is 2nd millennium BC. We have Iron Age, which is 1st millennium BC. And then we have archaeology of later period. So, and then on the southern side, we have the acacia tree forest. Then we have the Bredrichten palm garden. So it's the whole package which is coming together in this narrow corridor.
Well, help me out on this, because when we say 16th century about that fort, I know about it when the British were around in the late 1800s. Who had it before the British?
I wouldn't say 16th century. For sure, we know it's 19th century, but there were some records saying there were some remains of
Something.
Yes, but the fort itself, it's 19th century.
Right, because when you think about its location, it would stand to reason that somebody wanted to use it as a watchtower because you had the benefit of being so high up.
Yes, it was a defensive structure, and it was used as a defense last resort against the British attack in 1819. So it was a defensive structure.
Now, RAK, Ras Al Khaimah, is divided really into two parts, isn't it?
Yes.
The old part, right?
Yes.
In that old part, how far back does that go?
It's amazing. When people come here and we tell them that we have 7,000 years of history in Ras Al Khaimah, they, wow. Because they think it's a desert. There might be just tribes, historically, very limited history. But in Ras Al Khaimah, we have 7,000 years of history. And the reason is the diverse landscape we have here, like mountains, the agriculture area, palm gardens, coastline, desert. And this resulted in this amazing archaeology. And this was the reason we had permanent settlement in Ras Al Khaimah. Unlike the other emirates, people were permanently staying in Ras Al Khaimah. And the result is this history of 7,000 years.
Even the museum has a history, because that's really the former home of the ruling family.
Yes, yes. It's again, it's a very unique building. And then it's a national museum of Ras Al Khaimah. So then again, it was started as a defensive platform against the British attack. And then it was growing and growing. And so it has really an amazing history in terms of traditional architecture and local history.
And speaking of tradition, you don't have to look far to see, what, some abandoned fishing villages that used to be the big livelihood.
Yes, again, I mean, the after the decline of Julfa period in 16th century, we have, again, a massive boom of traditional architecture. Like, we have watchtowers, traditional mosques, towns, villages, and then we have the coast towns like Rams, Marid, Ras Al Khaimah, Jazirat Al Hamra. So there, in the last 400 or 500 years, it was really like a spread of urbanization in Ras Al Khaimah, and which resulted in this amazing traditional architecture. We have more than 600 sites we have.
Now, I have to ask you, because you're the archaeologist, are you still finding stuff?
A lot. Sometimes we are really surprised, like in Jazirat Al Hamra, we were digging a mosque, and the historical sources from our survey, we thought there will be another mosque underneath. And we found five more mosques under the standing mosque.
How deep did you have to go?
I mean, we didn't go too deep. It was 1.5 meter, nearly 1.5 meter. But again, I mean, the local culture or history is they would just build on top of each other. So we found five mosques and two other structures. So seven structures on top of each other.
And were they preserved?
Yeah, very well preserved. And we are planning to conserve them and then open it for visitors.
That's a lot of work.
It's a lot of challenging work.
How long do you think it's going to take you?
Jazirat Al Hamra is, again, it's a very, very unique, important coastal town. I won't be wrong if I say this is the only authentic surviving coastal town in the whole of Gulf. And there are 150 structures. Again, it's a lot of, this is the only such huge scale project in the whole world. Normally, we see there are building recording and analysis, excavations, conservation, restoration, but here we are doing everything together. So it's a lot of research, a lot of strategies, a lot of methodologies we are developing. So it's a really, really massive project.
And I would presume most of this work is done by hand.
Yes, like the mosque I was talking about.
Yeah.
There we have done 1,600 contexts, which means 40,000 recording. So, and everything by hand. So 14,000 recording. It took us 8 months continuously, even during the summer. So it's massive, massive recording. And we are producing massive data. So also we are planning to archive it properly for the research, future generations. So it's really, really a massive work we are doing there.
Toto? Feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Talk about sustainability. We talk about environmental management. We talk about responsible tourism. My next guest knows a lot about that because he's the executive director of Environmental Protection and the Development Authority here. It's Dr. Saif Mohammed Al-Qais. Welcome, sir.
Hi.
Doctor, let's talk about this, because when people see desert, they forget a lot of times it's a very fragile environment.
Oh, yes, indeed. But there is a misunderstanding that the desert, I think it is an empty ecosystem, while it is a flourish ecosystem, which has a lot of biodiversity in it. But some people, they misunderstand that. They think desert
is nothing.
Is nothing.
So when someone wants to build something here, whether it's a road, it's a hotel, it's an apartment building, it's whatever kind of facility they want, you could just say, go build it, but that wouldn't work.
Oh, no. I mean, without doing an environmental impact assessment, they won't be getting the NOC for that project.
The certificate of occupancy.
Yes.
The environmental impacts
assessment
is a relatively new thing. And of course, the criteria, I'm sure, must have changed.
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, it is when you say a new thing, for the last, I will say, at least 10-15 years.
Right, that's new.
Yeah.
That's new.
But for us, probably we say that is a requirement for any developmental project in the whole UAE, even not just Ras Al Khaimah.
So, what are your requirements for that assessment to make sure that the environment's protected when somebody wants to build a hotel?
Well, it depends. Where is the hotel going to be? Is it a sensitive area? Or it is by
on the water?
Yes, if it is on the beach or if it is in a mountain area. So the first thing, we look at the ecosystem or the habitat where that hotel is going to be built. And before they start building the hotel, we have to assess the impact on the environment. And from our authority, usually we hire a third body who will be like a consultant, will review the impact of that project in the environment, and if they say it is a go-ahead, then we give them the NOC. Otherwise, we have to put the alternative.
So, but I'm looking for the criteria. For example, I'll give you an example. In Thailand, there's a rule that you cannot get that certificate of occupancy if you're building a hotel unless it's in increments of like 62 units. That you have to provide staff housing, you have to provide waste treatment, you have to provide gray water, black water treatment. You can't just pump it into the bay. And it's a very well-intentioned law. And a lot of these big hotels, you know, got their authority to build, and yet what they did to get around the rules, they sold off units at 60 units each. So they were under the 62-unit rule. And they were still pumping raw sewage out into the bay. Guess what happened? They had to close the bay.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't do it responsibly. So have you been able to write the regulations so that that kind of stuff doesn't happen?
Oh, yes. We have a limit for any emission or coming either from, if I may say, from a hotel or a factory. And there is a regulation on that in UAE. So they cannot exceed that. And what you have just gave an example, that does not exist here in UAE. Without agreeing with the permit limit for that regulation, they won't be giving the NOC.
So in the last 5 or 6 years, have you denied a number of those permits?
Oh, yes, definitely. We have a lot. And we have denied some big establishment. We did not give them the permit because we felt that going to have an impact in a sensitive ecosystem where we had them to shift their facility to another area because it will have a very negative impact if it's built in that area. And even recently, we have some project where we give them the suggestion, some alternative. We give them an alternative. If we feel that project going to have an impact, for example, in the marine environment, if it's in a coastal area. So we give them some suggestion. Okay, don't do it in this way. You have to do it in that way.
And if they agree to do it, then you're most likely to give them the permit.
Oh, yes.
I mean, people don't realize that a lot of work goes into it now. It's not just rampant development, because if you wanted to, you could develop the entire coastline and it would be nothing but high rises.
Oh, yes, definitely. But you're going to lose the biodiversity if that happened.
And you just can't do that.
Yeah.
If you are continuing on to another Southwest destination, please make sure that you check the monitors inside the terminal for your proper gate and flight information. If you are continuing on with another airline, we really don't care.
I am a passenger.
We're going to talk to somebody who's lived here since she was a baby. And, you know, I always like to ask the locals. Well, she's local, all right. In fact, she's been here for how long now?
Well, I'm now 40, so...
You've been here almost 40. Her name is Nicola Henderson Hall. She's the founder and host of the Learning Curve podcast, mm-hmm. and a UK expat. Fair enough?
I am, yes, yeah. Very much.
Okay, obviously you came here because mom and dad brought you here.
And they're still here now.
Wow. What brought them here? Because 40 years ago, there was nothing here.
Oil.
Yeah.
My dad is in the oil industry, still is. He came out here. It was an opportunity to make some money, pay off the mortgage, and have a new life.
And let me guess, he did.
He did. He persuaded my mom, who hadn't left the UK in 30-odd years. And he said, it's a beautiful place. You will love it.
of course, let's be honest, 40 years ago, as beautiful it was, there was nothing
it
here.
It was just sand.
Just sand.
Yeah.
And more sand.
Yeah. My mom opened the curtains and went, oh. So, yeah, she was, her eyes were opened.
Well, and the growth curve is almost exponential, isn't
amazing,
it?
Amazing, amazing. It's been a... To see the UAE as a child and then see it now, you know, at this point, I always see the UAE as like a, you know, 27-year-old person who's kind of in the prime of their career type of thing, but still got a long, long, exciting journey with lots of innovation and ideas ahead. So
I mean, I remember the first time I came here, of course, I came to Dubai.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I came to Dubai was literally by accident. I was flying from Singapore to London, mm-hmm. and the plane stopped because mm-hmm. it didn't have the range.
Mm-hmm.
And when it stopped, oh my goodness, these Irish guys who ran the duty free.
Yes, yes.
The crazy guys.
Yes.
And I, every plane stopped at around 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night,
mm-hmm.
and you'd get off the plane and you'd walk. There was no real airport. You just walk.
That's right.
The only real building was the duty free,
mm-hmm.
right? And all of a sudden you see other people, they were not walking, they were running. Because they knew about the duty-free, because these guys were running an operation that, I mean, you could buy a Mercedes in there. You could buy fur coats. And I remember watching one night, I remember I was on Singapore Airlines. I watched a Polish airline plane came in, mm-hmm. right, come in, it landed, and the people came piling off that plane mm-hmm. like they were running the sprint. Why? They wanted to buy everything they possibly could to yeah. take back to Poland.
Mm-hmm. And it was the same with the Russians as well. We
yeah.
had Chinese and Russians
crazy.
Coming in.
And then they would go back to the plane with cases of mm-hmm. Johnny Walker and cases.
Mm-hmm. And like, TVs.
Right. And I was going, how is this plane going to get in the sky? And we'd all watch as it's going, going the wrong way. Because we never thought it would make, but it did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the next time I came back, there was more than just that building. And yeah. it just got crazier and crazier.
Yeah.
There are those who would argue that Dubai had an unlimited budget and they managed to exceed it.
I suppose, yeah. It in the way the country has grown and the number of buildings we have, it's just, it's amazing.
And then here comes Abu Dhabi, which really mm-hmm. bailed out Dubai mm-hmm. when they had their problem.
Well, that's what they say.
Well, somebody got bailed out, right? But then there are the other Emirates that don't really get a lot of attention,
yeah.
right? There's Ajman and, mm-hmm. and Sharjah mm-hmm. and Ras, right?
Al Quwain, Fujairah.
Right.
Yeah. Calba.
So these are the Emirates that I like to go to because mm-hmm. they're the little hidden gems.
Yeah, they are. They're totally hidden gems.
What's a hidden gem about RAK?
Oh, I think the coastline and the mountains. You know, it's the only part of the country that has mountains. And, you know, Abu Dhabi, Dubai, it is just all dunes. And then as you drive across to this part, the dunes start to change color. They get more sort of sunset-ish and darker and redder. And then the mountains sort of come up, the rocks appear, and that's beautiful. And then when you're cruising down the road, you've got the mountains on one side and you've got the coastline and the you know, light-colored ocean water. It's beautiful.
And for those people who need to get a map right now, listen to me carefully. We're only about an hour and 10 minutes from Dubai, mm-hmm. and what's really cool about this, if we keep going, we're in Oman.
Yeah.
Riding along in my automobile. My baby beside me at the wheel, cruising and playing the radio, with no particular place to go.
Audible.com has more than 150,000 titles and virtually every genre. So check it out for yourself. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial. Talking with Nicola Henderson Hall, the founder of the Learning Curve podcast. And before we get into what the podcast is,
mm-hmm.
what I have always found interesting about this region
mm-hmm.
is the role of women.
Mm-hmm.
Because it ain't Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Women here have a real role.
Women here do lots. You know, there's a massive drive by the government to encourage and motivate and inspire more and more women to get out there, to go into the corporate world, to be entrepreneurial. Entrepreneurial spirit here is massive.
And it's encouraged.
Absolutely. The more and more women that can go out and support their family and build something amazing is just fantastic.
When you think of all the Emirates, right?
Yeah.
And the proximity, because it's easy to get to all of them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right?
I'm going to Abu Dhabi tomorrow.
Well, don't hold it over me. But I mean, look, they're opening up a Louvre, right? Mm-hmm.
The Louvre.
Yeah.
That's due as well soon, yeah.
Of course. Mm-hmm. But where do you go? Because now you're a veteran expat, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Where do you go that's not in the brochure, that's mm-hmm. not in the guidebook, that if I were just visiting you for the first time, you'd say, I have to take you here?
Deep into the desert. You know, we just did it at the weekend. We head out about sort of 40, 50 kilometers away from the city so that you practically can get the dark sky because, the road lights are quite intense. And you just hang out there and it's beautiful. We did it at the weekend. We camped out. We had our barbecue. It was just beautiful. That is getting down to how the Bedouins used to live, you know, hanging around a fire, telling stories. That's great.
And it's all about those conversations.
It is. It is.
And yet, if you go to Dubai or Abu Dhabi, and it's starting to happen here as well, mm-hmm. you know, some of the well-known brands are all here. Look,
yeah.
we're coming from the Waldorf Astoria,
we are.
And recognizable brands,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Where are the places you like to go within the Emirates, mm-hmm. not just outside of town in the mountains or mm-hmm. the desert,
mm-hmm.
That are not necessarily branded but are hidden gems?
Oh, gosh.
For breakfast, lunch, dinner.
Oh, then I go down to, down in Satwa in Dubai, there's a place called Ravi's. It's an institution. It's a Pakistani restaurant. It's been there since I was a kid. That is, 20 dirhams and you've got a full meal.
It 20 dirhams is about $3.50?
Yeah, yeah. And
no, $4 actually.
The food is great. It is a hidden gem, you know. And then down in Dubai, down in Daraside, there are places there as well. Just corner places, sort of not mom and pop type stuff, but close enough to that. And in there, you speak to the boss, you speak to the waiters. It's nice, you know. And that's taking you away from the sort of pristine look of the hotels, which obviously here caters for the tourists.
I mean, with all due respect, I don't want to come all the way over to Dubai to go to TGIF.
No, exactly. Well, that's the great thing about Dubai. It is a melting pot of different nationalities. And every night you could go out and have different food. You could have Pakistani food. You could have Arab food. You know, you could have Nigerian food. You could have any type of food you want, but you don't have to go to the hotels for that. You can go to the smaller places.
Hey, the best Lebanese food I've had was right in Dubai.
Yeah, which one was it?
I knew you were going to ask. But they had belly dancing. They had belly dancing. They did.
No, these are it's the small places that, they drive the heart of this city. And I love going to them. I love going to the big hotels. It's beautiful to get dressed up and go and sit in a nice space. But to be honest, I do like the sort of, here's your plate, here's your cup, go for it.
Here's your plastic chair.
Yeah, and here's your plastic
exactly.
chair.
Exactly.
Here's your plastic menu.
When you look at Dubai and the unbelievable development they've had there, mm-hmm. followed right behind them by Abu Dhabi,
yeah,
and then you come here mm-hmm. to Ras Al Khaimah, mm-hmm. it's a refreshing almost.
It is. A lot of people come to Ras Al Khaimah, Umm Al Quwain, at this end of the country, just basically to reopen the... open your mind again, refresh yourself, because Dubai and Abu Dhabi can be quite stressful from the driving to the fast pace of the cities, but coming here just slows everything down. And that's what...
No traffic jams here.
There are traffic jams here. Yeah, there are.
They last for 4 minutes. Come on.
But it's nice. People come here just to open up and clear out and just relax. A bit like going to Oman. Oman is a bit like that as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my suggestion is for somebody to come right here to Ras Al Khaimah and mm-hmm. then after a couple of days get the car and just keep going until mm-hmm. you get to the Musandam Peninsula.
It's beautiful. It really is. It's inspiring. It's motivating. It just cleans you and makes you feel refreshed and ready to take on the next stressful challenge that you're about to walk into.
What's the biggest challenge here in RAK?
The biggest challenge here? Not that many. I think traffic, really. The Emirates we have lots of great roads, but we still have traffic problems because there's more and more people coming to this country because it inspires and drives so many people. So that would be my big thing.
Well, they're working on a train.
I know. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to
that. And a high-speed train,
yeah.
I know.
Have you heard about the inner tube thing?
Oh, the tube, right.
Yeah.
What, 12 minutes between Abu Dhabi and Dubai?
No.
Yeah, please. I'll let you take the first ride. I'll let you test that one.
But it's exciting. But this is an example of what's going on here. So many people are coming to the UAE and trying out new things. People are excited by that.
There you go. Keep that going. This is Flight 372 on SWA. The flight attendants on board serving you today. Teresa in the middle, David in the back. My name is David, and I'm here to tell you that. Shortly after takeoff, first things first, there's soft drinks and coffee to quench your thirst. But if you want another kind of drink, then just holler. Alcoholic beverages will be $4. If a Monster energy drink is your plan, that'll be $3, and you get the whole can.
We won't joining me now, I'm going to pronounce his entire name because it's a long one. His Excellency Sheikh Salem bin Sultan bin Saq al-Qassimi. Did I get it right, sir?
Yes, sir.
I got it all right?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I win nothing, but I did okay. Who really runs civil aviation here in the Emirate. And when you built the airport here, that was, what, 1974?
Yeah.
You knew you had to build an airport or nothing else could come.
Sure.
How big is the airport?
Well, it's an international airport, and the runway is 3760 meters. Which accommodate,
so a little bit more than 9,000 feet.
Yes, and which accommodate most of the aircraft in the industry, except 380s, which hopefully soon we could on a special permission. Yeah.
Yeah, like if nobody else is at the airport, you could land one.
Yes. So.
But opening up an airport doesn't. It's like the movie Field of Dreams. You know, just because you build it doesn't mean they're going to come. So when you opened the airport, who did come?
At the beginning, Kuwait Airways started the first flight, inaugural flight, and then other airlines followed from the Middle East and Indian subcontinent and Africa. And initially it was to operate and serve the community in Ras Al Khaimah and Northern Emirates.
Right. And then after that, some dropped out, some added.
Yes.
Who's your main airline now?
Now we have Air Arabia is the designated airline. In addition to Qatar Airways and Indian Aviation Express.
And room to expand.
Air India Express, sorry. Yeah.
And a lot of room to expand.
Yes.
How do you go about attracting an airline to come in? What incentives can you possibly give them that they're not getting from your next door neighbors in Abu Dhabi and in Sharjah and even in, of course, especially in Dubai?
True. First of all, the traffic right is what incentivizes them. And the second is the catchment area, the population. And the destination where they can serve their operation from Ras Al Khaimah, Northern Emirates, and beyond. So in the case of Air Arabia, they are designated airline, and they are operating to the regional destinations.
So what's their longest flight?
The longest flight is about to Nepal and Bangladesh.
Wow.
Yes.
Anything to Europe?
At the moment, on Air Arabia, no, but we have Qatar Airways who is operating through Doha to
anywhere you want to go.
Anywhere in the world, yes.
Exactly. Yes. So when you think about the airport in Dubai, it's saturated right now.
Yeah.
They had to build another airport.
Yes.
Right? Same thing in Abu Dhabi. They're building another airport.
True.
Right? So you guys are actually open for business without having to build another airport.
Yes. There's room to increase our the traffic in Ras Al Khaimah, and we are focused mostly on bringing tourists to this beautiful emirate, where we can operate charters and schedule operations to service the growth in the Northern Emirates and Ras Al Khaimah for tourism.
Well, you're certainly getting a lot of growth in hotel building.
Yes.
This hotel is a big hotel. You have other hotels that are going up, big hotels.
Yes.
You got to fill those rooms.
Yeah.
Are you working closely with the hotels to figure out a way to get these people in terms of large numbers?
I think the tourism department in Ras Al Khaimah, the authority, they're doing their best job to sell all these rooms.
All right, so then let me go back and ask a question that I know you can answer.
Yeah.
Are you competitive on airfares?
Yes. We are offering a better rates in terms of ticket prices and in terms of other services, transportation, rooms, and other services.
I mean, to put it in perspective, it's about an hour and 10-minute drive from Dubai,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So if somebody's willing to drive that hour and 10 minutes, they'll get a better air deal?
Yes.
Every time?
Yeah.
Wow. And how much are we talking about? Like a flight to Nepal is how much?
I think to almost 10% in terms of prices. We offer at the airport. We offer a better landing and handling fees and
for the airlines.
Yes, for the airlines.
So they're not getting hit on landing fees as much as the other airlines.
Yes,
exactly.
Yes.
And who are you looking out for now, other than the ones who are landing here now?
Yes.
Who's your dream airline to come in here?
Well, we are thinking about European airlines where they are serving now other airports in the Emirate, and we are in constant meeting with them and to attract them and to service their community also.
Hello, this is your captain speaking. There is absolutely no cause for alarm.
Get your motor running. Head out on the highway. Looking for adventure.
When I first came here, 1982, it was just desolate. There was nothing here. Couple of roads, couple of small buildings, huge coastline, mountains, but not much. And boy, what a difference just one decade has meant. And joining me who's seen all of this development from day one, he's the chief operating officer of RAK Properties, Muhammad Al-Tayer. How are you, sir?
Fine.
And I should say, in the interest of full disclosure, you're a Longhorn. You went to the University of Texas in Austin, didn't you?
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Wish they had a better football team this year, but yeah, you know that.
Later on, I'll tell you.
I know. It's another story. But you've seen all the expansion, and I guess the real question is, when you look at the expansion and the development in Dubai, and then you see what Abu Dhabi has done, you guys are sort of a hidden gem. You guys are small in terms of actual square miles, small in terms of population, but you have an opportunity to learn from the mistakes of others, to manage your growth in such a way that it's responsible.
Yes.
And how have you done that?
We are proud, first of all, that we are under the support of His Highness Sheikh Saud here and Ras Al Khaimah Emirate. And
he takes a direct role.
Of course, yes. And with the support also of His Crown Prince, Sheikh Mohammed bin Saud, we could achieve all these projects and development in Ras Al Khaimah starting from the last 10 years. We could achieve the development of a lot of projects in Ras Al Khaimah. We did not move in that fast track as you just mentioned, but
you did that intentionally.
Yes,
you wanted to go a little bit slower.
Exactly. The idea was not to go aggressive, very aggressive, but we were going maturely with the need of the and the real estate market. And thank God we completed this development with in a successful way, with a lot of satisfaction from our customers and citizens in Ras Al Khaimah.
I mean, it gets down to basic infrastructure, doesn't it? Because if you've got a population of only 300,000, and you can't build an infrastructure for another 300,000, you'll kill yourself.
Yep.
Right? That is. I mean, look at Dubai. I mean, it's just rampant, the expansion.
In Dubai, it's a different story. There is a big demand also in Dubai. They are planning to attract a lot of tourism, a lot of residents in Dubai, in different areas. They are planning now to build also their new airport. So they have different plans. And they think that they can fill all of these developments. Here in Ras Al Khaimah also we have our own plans, and we are following our plan as it was set by the government here. And I think every market has its own demand and supply.
Sure, but if you go back, let's say, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you go back 10 or 15 years, tourism wasn't high on your list.
Yes, it was not, but now it is our main objective in Ras Al Khaimah.
And why?
We feel that people deserve to come and enjoy the Ras Al Khaimah tourism destinations. We feel that these destinations are great, and we need people to share it with us. They should enjoy the experience these destinations and make them great to spend their time here, to live with their families in relaxation and peaceful environment.
Of course, in the interest of full disclosure, I'm embarrassed to tell you that most of my fellow countrymen have no idea where we are right now.
Thank you very much. That's,
but they don't know.
I can see that.
Half the kids you went to college with in Texas have no idea where you are.
Yes.
Am I right?
Yes, you're right.
So how do you change that?
As I mentioned to you, it was done with the vision of His Highness Sheikh Saud. and with the support of all entities here, governmental entities in Ras Al Khaimah, they have their own plans, and we are moving together as one hand to achieve the plan of the Emirate here.
Are there trends that you're following, like wellness? That seems to be a growing one, or medical tourism.
We are actually we are following different trends here in Ras Al Khaimah. Wellness is one of them. Family entertainment is one of them. Water parks. Now we started doing water parks in Ras Al Khaimah. I think
you want to be more family friendly.
Of course, this is the main idea. It's not for a small experience for a small segment of customers. No, it's for family. We believe that if we attract families and make the environment here enjoyable for them, this will be the success of our plan.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Catch us each week as we broadcast from a new location somewhere around the world.